In preparing for this last interview today, I looked at the list of Australians who were Rhodes Scholars, and a number of times had one of those I-didn't-know-they-were-a-Rhodes moments. There is a certain esteem attached to being a Rhodes Scholar, and we've had three as our Prime Ministers, Bob Hawke, Tony Abbott and Malcolm Turnbull, as well as Opposition Leader Kim Beazley. The incumbent Energy Minister Angus Taylor is one too, as is the writer Richard Flanagan. I could go on. The origins of the Rhodes date back to 1902, offering winners a chance to study at the University of Oxford as a gift of the 19th century British explorer come developer Cecil Rhodes. He was a devout empire man, and it was intended for recipients in the Commonwealth as well as the US and Germany. Well, thankfully, there have been some changes in that history. It's joined the modern world and late last year appointed a woman to run things for the first time. Elizabeth Kiche is an American Rhodes Scholar herself. She's busily tried to expand the scholarship's range to maintain its prestige. She was in Australia as a guest of Rhodes Scholarships, and I spoke to her just before she left to return to her home in Oxford.
Thank you so much. I'm delighted to be with you.
As I mentioned, you're a Rhodes Scholar yourself. You're the first woman to be CEO of the Trust. But it was only in 1977 that women were first able to apply. And I understood that took a bit of work to amend the rules.
It sure did. You know, there had been a lot of activism, as you can imagine, throughout the 60s and 70s for women to be eligible. But under the terms of the Trust, they weren't. So it ultimately took an act of the UK Parliament for the trustees to be permitted to expand eligibility to women.
Well, surely wasn't just the Rhodes Trust. This was a broader thing, was it?
No, absolutely. I mean, it's one of those bills where I believe the wording was that trusts set up specifically for men could at their discretion, you know, expand eligibility to women. So it applied to other trusts, but I think the reason for the bill was absolutely the Rhodes Scholarship, because that's where the lobbying and advocacy had come from.
And I think I recall this myself from Australia, that the women started to come through the ranks from 1978 onwards. Is that right?
That's right. That's right.
And how many since then? Like, what's the ratio from then till now?
The ratio is now basically 50-50. We have some years where we have a few more men, some years where we have a few more women, and which is actually a wonderful reflection of how the world has changed. You know, we have a very decentralized selection process. We don't sit in Oxford and decide who becomes a Rhodes Scholar. We have selection committees in 60 different constituencies, about 500 volunteer selection committee members all around the world. And, you know, in each case, they're trying to decide among the finalists who are the most qualified to be Rhodes Scholars. So it's exciting to see that women are now very much, we're very much at gender parity, and we have ever greater racial and ethnic inclusion as well. I mean, just to give you an example, this past year of the 32 U.S. Rhodes Scholars, 10 were African American, which is an all-time record. And we've also had a number of Aboriginal scholars elected out of Australia. So it's very nice to see that more and more people from different backgrounds are eligible for this scholarship.
So when were you there, Elizabeth? When did you win your Rhodes?
So I won in 1983, and I read philosophy and actually stayed to do my doctorate there. So I was there longer than your typical Rhodes Scholar, at least at that time. We increasingly have scholars who come and stay for their doctorate. So I was there from 83 to 87, and at Balliol College, had a wonderful experience. And among the wonderful experiences I had was that I met my husband, who is an Aussie.
So, I see. Balliol is quite popular with Australians. And what do you remember of your time there? How has it affected your life?
You know, it was completely transformational for me, as I think it is for most Rhodes Scholars, in a number of ways. I mean, there is something to the magic of being at the world's oldest English-speaking university. I mean, you know, you're walking in the footsteps of these extraordinary people. You're studying in libraries that were built, you know, hundreds and hundreds of years ago. The dreaming spires, as people say, you know, the architecture is just stunningly beautiful. There are so many world world-renowned scholars, you know, in different fields. I mean, certainly in philosophy, I had a chance to study with very famous philosophers, but also to get to know people like Amartya Sen, who subsequently got the Nobel Prize in Economics, and, you know, just remarkable, remarkable faculty. And then the students are so diverse, so global, but also diverse in their aspirations. So I think in a way that was very broadening for me personally, as it, I think it is for many scholars, and it has really, it broadened my mind in ways that I'm supremely grateful for.
What an incredible privilege. A friend of mine who was there said they also insisted on enormous amounts of writing in your work. You just had to write and write and write, and that changed them too.
I have to tell you, it still brings back sometimes slightly traumatic memories of, you know, I would ask my supervisor, you know, what should I read? And he would rattle off the titles of, you know, 10 or 11 books and said, you know, write an essay for next week, you know. And so I would be reading these books and, you know, trying to write an essay and then bring it in with trembling hands to read it out loud and, you know, to get that immediate feedback. And it's, you know, that's one of the great things about Oxford is that you typically work, it varies from course to course, but you often get to work one-on-one or perhaps three students, you know, with one tutor or supervisor. And, you know, that intensity, you know, you can't hide in the back of the lecture room. You're really sharing your thoughts and ideas and your arguments and getting feedback. And you just learn so much from that.
How terrifying. I mean, and you yourself came from a broad enough background as it was, because your parents had really were refugees after the 1956 Hungarian Revolution. Your father had been imprisoned he'd fought both the Nazis and the communists. So you came from a background that I assume sort of encouraged you to step up.
Absolutely. I mean, it was a, you know, just an incredibly rich and amazing family heritage, which, by the way, it's interesting. We do have quite a few Rhodes Scholars who are either themselves immigrants or children of immigrants or refugees. But yeah, so I brought that with me, and just the people that I got to meet, I will be forever grateful.
Now, I'm going to quote now, Rhodes Scholars are selected on the criteria of outstanding intellect and on qualities of character, leadership and commitment to service. So I'm wondering, you've described this formation, really, when you think about it, of a leadership mentality, a readiness to step up, the very thing, the very, very commodity that people say is so wanting in the world at the moment. Have you got any thoughts of your own as to why we seem to be in such a pickle?
Oh, goodness. We're in this very strange moment in time when I think there is a crisis in many countries of public leadership. There's also, and, you know, this is something that I really worry about, and I feel like, you know, we have a job at the Rhodes Scholarship to try to step up even more to address, is that people seem to be taking for granted and questioning the value of the global alliances that were built up post-World War II and also, you know, to some extent post the end of the Cold War, you know, with great, great difficulty and a lot of blood, sweat, and tears, you know, that went into creating global institutions that have, you know, if you will, kept the peace for more or less for several decades. And all of that seems to be fraying. And, you know, whether it's the aftermath of the global financial crisis, whether it's that something about human nature is that we take things for granted and forget how hard it was to create them. But, you know, it is a very odd time at the moment. And I think a time when trying to cultivate globally minded leadership among young people from all over the world is so important.
Well, what's the Rhodes doing about that? I mean, you're aiming, I understand, to make the trust have a much more geographically diverse approach. Can citizens from every country apply, or is that not allowed?
It is absolutely the case now that anyone can apply. So what we've been doing over the past 10 years or so has been a significant focus on geographic expansion. So we've added scholarships in China. We elect four scholars a year from China, but also Saudi Arabia, United Arab Emirates, Israel, Syria, Jordan, Lebanon, Palestine, East Africa, West Africa, just to name a few. So these are where we have a local selection committee and a selection process. So we've, you know, very significantly globalized. But in addition, last year, we started what we call our Global Rhodes Scholarship, which is available to anyone, any young person who is in a country that doesn't otherwise have eligibility. They can apply through the global pathway. And in our first round last year, we had applicants from 32 countries. I got to participate in that selection process, which was incredible. We ended up with 11 finalists from 10 countries, and our winners were a young woman from Russia and a young man from Ethiopia. So really amazing.
And there's just two other areas that I noticed represented quite a shift. There's a push, I gather, to open the field to a greater range of universities, not just the sandstones, as we call the big traditional ones, but the regional universities, and to expand beyond the notion of sport being the other big pursuit, because it used to be intellectual pursuits and something else like sports, but you're trying to expand it to, say, the arts or...
Yes, so yes, on both fronts. I mean, certainly we want to expand our reach and encourage bright young people from all backgrounds, all universities, and that is something I know that the National Secretary here in Australia for the past 5 years has, Marnie Hughes Warrington, has worked very hard to get the scholarship known across a wider range of universities. I'm actually working on creating a core, if you will, of Rhodes ambassadors, so either current scholars or people who recently graduated who can go visit different universities and make sure that, you know, students really know about this opportunity and get the chance to apply. And then as far as sports goes, Mr. Rhodes himself talked about the energy to use your talents to the full, as exemplified by, and he talked about actually manly sports as well. but, you know, we are actually for quite a number of years, we have broadened that. And we're looking for students who are energetic change makers and who have that potential to really make a difference in the world.
Well, good luck to you. It's that's a terrific development. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.